This is CliffCentral.com.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's absolutely fantastic to be here in studio on a holiday. Yes, it's Women's Day.
Yeah. And, someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. I mean, it's amazing to
see Happy Women's Day, Brett.
Me in studio, right?
Yes, welcome. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I do feel like I've been left out. Thanks for all the invites, guys.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Brett. It's nice to see you again.
Thanks for ignoring all of them.
Nice. I was going to say, it's a nice haircut. Is that to get rid of all the grey hair there?
Yeah, I'm loving your haircut.
Well, actually, I was in Ireland this weekend. I landed this morning, and I went with the kind of long, wavy grey hair, and I saw a whole lot of old colleagues
who
laughed at
better than
how
you.
Fat I was and how grey I've got. So I immediately went to the barber, had it chopped off, and said, you can only laugh at me being fat.
An Irish barber.
Did you tell the joke? South African.
South African barber in Ireland.
What's the Irish joke?
No, it's out of context.
Totally. Are you sure you didn't wake up with that hairstyle? You actually went to the barber?
His hair is not receding yet, Mike.
No, it's not.
I'm not pretending. It's ever looked to your head.
We're going to start a fight in the studio.
But guys, let's just pull it back from Brett's hairstyle and how fat he's actually got.
And back to the day that is today.
back to the day that is today. Yes. It's Women's Day. So happy Women's Day.
And it's the start of Women's Month, right?
Yes.
So I think it's quite apt. Yeah, on the show.
My wife's convinced it's the start of Women's Year, but I'm not going to argue with her.
No, don't.
I've learned that too.
Yeah, that's good.
That started the day we got married. It was like the year of the woman's century.
I've learned not to argue with his wife either.
Nice. What have you two been doing?
It's fine. It's a Brett thing.
She has a type. It's the first time.
You know what? Next week we're having another mic in the studio. I'm going to go find another mic.
Okay.
I'm going to go find one. I'm tired of having too many Bretts in the studio.
Sounds fair.
Okay. Mike, there are already five mics in this room. You're going to tell me
You know that's
six.
Getting so tired. It's getting so tired.
He'll probably still use it next week.
Yeah. Sorry, probably will still use it next week.
You probably will.
That's awesome. But today we're talking.
Exactly. You guys, now focus, guys.
Focus.
We are talking to Leanne Detoy.
Ah, cool.
About entrepreneurship.
Hi Leanne.
Hello.
Hi guys.
On the other
good to be here.
Isn't it great how good Skype is sounding these days? I mean, Leanne, you're adding a ton of value to that call already, but the quality is amazing on this connectivity. I'm loving life.
It is sounding amazing. And where are you in Cape Town at the moment, Leanne?
Outside of, based in Waterfront, the Workshop 17, at the YPO offices.
Nice.
Excellent.
So, congrats on the new role at YPO. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Cool. So, YPO is a member-led organization of 25,000 people. It's got 130 chapters around the world. And it's, I've only been there a month, but I'm definitely on the YPO Kool-Aid. It's an awesome place to work, treating their staff really well and got huge expansion plans. So, they've opened up a whole new department called Networks, which is great. And also it was founded in 1950 and one of the first companies to have a woman member on their board back then. So, very cool to be a part of.
Well done. That's fantastic. And where were you before that? Because you've got quite a long history in terms of an entrepreneurial career down in Cape Town there. Do you want to just give us a bit more of a background? Because I read through your profile and you've done it's pretty cool shit going on there, man.
Yeah, so we're running a school for startups at the Graduate School of Business called the Venture Incubation Program, which was sponsored by MTN. Nice. We had three cohorts that went through, and it was just what was really awesome about it is that we were allowed to not fail in the sense, but we were allowed to test and validate and come up with better ways of how we can actually get entrepreneurs into the space. And every time we did a different mechanism, something new would happen. So for instance, in our second cohort, out of 70 participants or out of 70 people that applied, only two of them were female. And we were it was mind-blowing that why are so little females applying? So on the front end, you've got people saying, well, there's not enough females in the space, but it's like, well, where are they? They're not putting up their hands. So there was that thing of like, how do you approach men and women differently? Whereas men kind of, it seems that they just kind of need to have a little bit of a framework where women need to have a solid thing to say, I tick all these boxes. So that was a really quite a big insight. It's just people just trying to show up rather than not.
So what's your view on why there aren't that many women in the tech space, right? I mean, I've seen it in the Silicon Valley space. You've got people like Sheryl Sanders, who's really putting a massive drive or lean in to help start kind of repositioning that we get the right balance. I mean, you look at it in the leadership. I think she mentioned something like under 20% of all leaders in the tech space are women. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I think that there's a few reasons. I think one of them is, you know, how can you affect change in a world where only half of it feels invited or feels welcome to participate in the conversation? And it comes to a gender thing, but it also comes to even like a cultural thing. So people that have previously not been included, it's like, how do you know that your opinion is valid? And I suppose that's why as you get older, you just start validating your own opinion. But yeah, I think people just haven't maybe felt welcome or, you know, then there's also the kid's story as well.
It's a bossy, right? I think she mentioned a great example of if you ask little boys what they think about leadership, it's all kind of stereotyped where when you ask girls, why aren't they aspiring into leadership roles? They say it's because I don't want to be seen as bossy. It's those kind of traits, right?
Yeah, definitely. You're too independent or, you know, you can't do that. But I think things are changing now. So I don't think it's as bad as it sounds. But I think more kids, people not having families and work becoming a focus. And I think, people are not. I think it's tricky and I think it's complicated. And I think we still don't know. And I think we're trying to figure it out. Where the diversity is becoming better, but the inclusivity maybe isn't.
Yeah.
So it's like planting the seeds of our future selves. And how are we doing that now so that people feel confident to do that? And I think it comes around confidence, not necessarily skill set, because a lot of people that are very confident can learn the skill, but it's like you've got to have it's the attitude, not necessarily the ability, because most of the things that we can do, it comes with that. It's almost like the soft stuff becomes more important than the hard stuff, and where we've been taught that the hard stuff is more important, where actually how you treat people, like finding companies that have the same value set as you, mentorship.
So true.
Like an example, which Sheryl Sandberg uses for the lean in is if you want a male mentor. So let's say if a guy is married and you want to go for a drink with him after work and you're not, that doesn't look good. But if it was a guy, it would be completely fine. So, you know, it's like those kind of boundaries
don't need to be crossed.
Yeah.
Actually, I think about it. Like I'm currently mentoring 6 people at the moment and 4 of them are ladies. I've never really thought about that situation.
They probably are.
But they probably are, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's these little nuances. I was having this conversation with someone this is more female entrepreneurship, but it's just little things which you don't even think of. So if you look at the people, if you look at like Code for Project Cape Town, Codex, their framework of how they work is that between 9 and 5 you work, you don't take your laptop home afterwards from a safety point of view. And all the actual things that you battle with, those are the things that you actually, you take into consideration.
Understand that. So that they're leaving their laptops at work.
So what they're saying is that you can't work from home from a safety point of view. You get all the things that you need to have to succeed is at work. It's not taken in out of context. That's a more of a diversity thing. Yeah.
That also helps with people getting a life. I mean, if you know that you have to be productive between 9 and 5, you focus on being productive between 9 and 5, and then the rest of the time, if you are family orientated, you go and family yourself till you have to go to sleep again, or you go party if you're that way inclined.
But also, that other part
of like females coming back into the workforce. So you've got these amazing women who have had kids, but have kind of been out of the workforce for 5-10 years, and now they've got to come back. How do they come back? How do they compete? So it's also about creating that flexibility. And I know, for instance, at YPO, it's very flexible. So as long as you do your KPIs, where you do that, how you do that, in what time frame is completely up to you. And I just feel like that's where we're moving towards. It's not about how many hours are you at the office. It's about what are you actually trying to achieve.
And Leanne, a lot of those women who go and have babies and come back into the workplace 5 years later, often their lives have fundamentally changed. And what they did before, coming back to your point around the hard and the soft skills, do they have to go and reskill themselves though? Because what they left and the way the pace of change is moving is it's so fast. Do they have to? Is this part of a problem? Is the reskilling and the ability to get back into the workplace and do work that is actually great and solves real problems, as opposed to just becoming a secretary? Forgive me for being a bit stereotyped about it, but you know, yeah. it's a reality.
No, I think that there are programs that are doing that, and where you almost get integrated slower. So maybe you work more on the strategy than the implementation. So you've got someone younger, maybe can do the implementation, but your experience then kind of plays a different role. But I think it is becoming easier because it is allowed. Yeah. Whereas before it was just, well, then you've got to just completely come in, where maybe it's not like that. Maybe, you know, we're finding these models of the future where if I'm good at this and you're good at that, then we kind of collaborate on that project, yeah, and then we move away. Yeah. So less of this, you know, big structure employee. It's almost like whoever's best for the job gets to do the job. Yeah. And I think we are definitely moving towards a more collaborative way or mindset. But in the past, it's like women were not really, and it's like a subconscious thing. It's like you're not really taught to support each other. Whereas I find, especially in Cape Town, that kind of has changed a bit. It's like, you know, it's pull each other up, bring each other with you, rather than compete. So it's, yeah, I find that backstabbing is not so much prevalent, especially in the tech ecosystem. Or people are called out on it because it is such a small-knit community.
Yeah, and the politics is simpler. Brett, you
want to say something? I want to bring it back to entrepreneurial spirit, I suppose, and linking it back to maybe not just men versus women or women and men trying to be inclusive or exclusive, but maybe a family focus. So a lot of, I started my business, I rebooted my business at the same time as my wife and I had our first child. And if I had to start it maybe 2 years later, so if I had a two-year-old, I'd probably be less likely to take on the risk associated with starting a new business.
Yeah.
Purely because of the responsibility that I now have towards my family. Mm. And I wonder, do you think that gets in the way sometimes with people with great ideas, maybe not looking to the collaboration point, thinking they have to do it all by themselves and thinking, oh shit, the risk is all on me. So I've got this great idea. Now I must motivate to make this business happen. I must do this. Rather than trying to go out to like-minded people and say, listen, I can do this from 10 till 3 because I've got to go pick little one up from nursery school. Like, I've got a life to live and I can be really productive from 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock at night because it's the power of startup. But how much do you think the family plays a role and the amount of risk versus responsibility that starts to play in new entrepreneurs and startups?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have a family. So for me, I have the flip side of that where, I think it plays a huge role. But I think also we haven't had that mindset of that collaboration to begin with. But then also you've got to have a really strong leader in the beginning to kind of say, okay, this is a structure, this is where we're going. And I think as a startup, what ends up happening is you go from like pillar to post where you're still just trying to figure out and download it. And as much as you've got all these supporting organizations that are trying to help, but you've still got to go through it yourself. And, you know, it's the same like with the school where you only know what you don't know when you don't know it at that time,
Hindsight's amazing.
It is. And you can listen to someone who has, you know, been through there and done it, but, you know, they're like, oh, now I know what they meant. But I think people are a little bit risk averse. And, I kind of see like the flip side of the coin where I suppose – I don't have that family structure, but my career is completely soaring. So, but now I'm the one who like gets to travel and do all these things, but at what cost and is there a cost and what's the perceived cost versus the actual payoff where it's kind of like, oh, well, you're single. Like, why is that? When actually, maybe that's a choice, not actually not a side effect.
Well, that becomes a shoulda, woulda, coulda situation as well. So.
Yeah.
And nor is it an indictment either.
But it should have both sides, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's no point in looking back and saying, I should have done that. If I would have done that, I could have done this. But the thing is, most of us find ourselves on the path we're on. I mean, again, the company that I created is called Big Brave. And I truly believe that if you're going to start a business, you need to be big-minded and brave in order to do it. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your risks or your responsibilities are. If you've got a great enough idea around a business and you're willing or passionate enough to actually get behind it, you've got to actually make that decision. You can't sit on the fence. Yeah. There's none of this, I'm going to spend 6 months trying to see it on part-time and see how well it does, because nothing does well part-time.
No,
nothing grows well enough in part-time. Plus, people start to see not just the the confidence you have within your new startup, but also the passion you bring to it. Exactly. So it's very much an individual thing.
Yeah, so in South Africa in 2015, there was only 7% of women who were involved in entrepreneurship. I think that has grown. I think it's become more of a focus. And, you know, it's great that there's Women's Month, but it doesn't have to be just a month. Like, you know,
it shouldn't
be. It's like that. Yeah, it should. But also not taking again from what you said earlier is that lack of men versus women. It should be a collaboration and like celebrate our differences, but celebrate our uniqueness, but also go forward and just understanding that better.
Just another discussion. So I'm quite interested in looking at the sort of factors that limit people from taking entrepreneurial opportunities.
Same thing. Is that what you're going to say? That's bizarre.
So we've got the startup mentality growing within this country. I mean, everybody's sort of looking for innovation and trying to find new ideas to do stuff. And a lot of it sits within the tech space. Is there still this idea that in order to have a startup or in order to be an entrepreneur, you need to have a great tech idea?
Yeah, because we used to be the land of middlemen, right?
Yeah. What's happened to home bank or home industries and what's happened to au pairs and what's happened to all these things that
shipping in stuff from overseas
service business
and then
import export
them,
right? Exactly. Import.
That's a big now.
Well, the junk status like is
if you get
opportunity
into a
all over.
Startup, you can only go tech, right?
Yes, and it's not true.
Or is it just because we're in tech?
Yes, I mean, I suppose my focus is more on tech and. You know, to be honest, is that I feel that the space at the moment, I mean, as much as I'm a believer in it, I also kind of feel like you need to fail a few times before you get anywhere. Mm. So this idea of someone coming in and, you know, going on a show and then getting, you know, money for it, how far does that go? And it's people back people that have done good stuff. So I think like, from an investment point of view, people want to have actually seen that you've got a bit of scars and battles. And I think our landscape just isn't – we have a very different culture where it's like if you fail, well, then, oh, my goodness, no one can touch you. You failed. We actually – if you haven't failed in, like, Silicon Valley, then no one will touch you anywhere.
You have no cred, right?
Yeah, you have no street cred. So
they've actually taken it to the point of ridiculous, though, haven't they?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
but I don't know. I quite like the idea of continuously failing with other people's money.
Yeah, life's a jolt. Just, just come up with a great idea, fleece somebody. Yeah.
I mean, hopefully it's not all like that. But I mean, we had this this event last week. It was called Future Females, and one of the things that came out of it, it's a great new concept. The team that's running it have really thought it through and. Not just a talk shop, but actually do action things at the end of that. And so they did a whole kind of agile thinking and what came out was what do women feel that you know, they want to do? And entrepreneurial mindset was actually one of them. So being comfortable outside their comfort zone and thinking lean and staying motivated. And then it was networking, business strategy, just actually getting started. And I think that's also the other part is people just don't know where to start. So there's no roadmap on like, well, you know, what next? How do you do this? And
I mean, I find it quite interesting, like getting started, but networking's right up there, right? And I think a lot of people forget how important you have to have a very strong network, especially in the smaller regions to be able to get started. And I think that then helps with your entrepreneurial mindset. I must say, right at the bottom is exit and sell. So defining an exit strategy.
Always have the exit strategy.
I mean, surely that's one of the things one thinks about right at the beginning, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the – and then also where are the stats skewed? So you've got your global – I think it was a survey that they did the other day, and the questions were all around funding, but you find that a lot of South African startups have actually not set up in South Africa. So – you know, then what's that also about? So how conducive is the landscape to setting up a business?
The better startups that I've come across, I mean, they bootstrap initially. It's all bootstrap. And then a lot of the guys are going for sort of some sort of grant, some sort of competition that actually gets them in front of something. So not necessarily taking a VC route immediately or definitely not going to the banks, because there's no point going to the banks directly and saying, hey, I've got this great idea. Here it is on paper.
We've got some great products, Brett.
No, but they are... that you need to qualify.
I said that with a
that you need to
face.
Qualify for at some point. So when you've got grey hair and you've got a comfortable life and everything you need from us then,
yes.
When you get all the stuff you need from us now, then call us.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what I said. Like, if my big thing with the banks, and sorry, I'm just going to rant for a while, but like my big thing was with the banks while we're trying to grow and scale a startup was trying to express the dream, because there's no passion or people when talking to the banks. It's all about profit, return on investment.
It's a formula. It's a
can you afford it? Yeah, affordability. Risk your EBITDA.
Yeah.
Or your EBITDA. Mm. And I hate that flipping thing because I didn't have it. And I probably still don't do it on paper.
Right.
Yeah. But where you go to sort of collaborative spaces and you go to opportunity spaces and say, look, this is what we're doing. I can get it this far. And you get to other people and be like, wow, that's really cool. If you start the networking, you don't really need to have too much of an exit strategy, because I do believe, and I'm going to jump around a bit on your points, but we've seen a lot of guys that come to us at Big Brave as well and ask for incubation and stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's cool, but if it doesn't work, we'll just do that. I'm like, well, if you're starting there, it's not a great point. It's good to have an exit strategy. Yeah. It's not a great idea to start with one.
Correct.
And if you're going to have one, be ready to change it. Because if you're going to pull other people on board, the strategies you have to grow and the strategies you have to stop need to move.
That's why it's also very important to think about the beginning. Also, right?
Importantly, funding can't be the only thing that stops you.
Correct.
Yeah. I think what they mean, well, as my understanding of this exit strategy, is more like, what's the next round going to be? How's the next scale up going to be? So let's say we're going to give ourselves 3 years to bootstrap it. And by this, we should have got X amount of customers. And from that, then we can scale it up to getting a bigger a manufacturing plant or whatever. Yeah. So I think that's when they talk about exit strategy. Okay. So when you talk with the VC, they've usually have a 5 to 7 year exit strategy. So it's not necessarily like how you're going to run away. Like just more,
if it fails, it can fail quietly.
Yeah, but it's more just how are you going to, because also a founder doesn't necessarily need to be a CEO. And you often find there's that line between an inventor and someone who runs the business, you know? Yes. So usually
Uber's
knowing
finding
that.
This out. Yeah, Uber's finding this out at the moment. Diversity issues across there. Funny enough. Eh? Sorry, I interrupted you there, Leanne.
No. Yeah, with Uber, yeah. So, that exit one is, it's quite big. And also what I do like about our ecosystem is that most of the things that get started or bootstrapped in the beginning and then have an initial investment, you'll see that they would have a Series A or Series C that will follow on quite quickly within the structures as well, because it's never just going to be one round. It's usually going to be more, but it's how do you get that business to not need the funding and rather just make it from the profits or, scale like that.
Absolutely.
You also don't want to be a pitch entrepreneur the whole time and, just going around from pitching event to pitching event.
And quite a few of those in South Africa, right?
Yeah. I mean, every time I run one of those, I feel like it's a necessary evil almost. And I have this debate with the VCs because they're like, oh, I hate coming to these pitching events. But then on the other side, it's like, well, when do people get the opportunity to actually pitch and come and say their piece?
I don't mind the events. Mm. I think the events are great. But I think there's this kind of trend of the same startups going from pitching event to pitching event.
Because people have got a goal to be incubating it. They don't actually want to get the thing produced. They just want to go from incubation to incubation. I want to be comfortable.
They're looking for safety. Yeah.
And that's not entrepreneurial.
No.
I think like for ours, for the school, we were very set on KPI. So you had to have a set of financials, an actual viable product at the end of it, and a game plan moving forward. And we would kind of kick you out of the nest if you didn't, if you reneged on any of those things. And it forced everyone to kind of level up as well. But it's hard. It's not, 3 months is a very short time. I don't think you can turn around a business in three months, I think you've got to apply that 10,000 hour rule. And, every successful startup, every successful overnight startup is actually a 10-year startup in the making, which people just kind of forget.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. And Leanne, your experience at Silicon Cape, because you were vice chair there.
So, that was great. I loved being a part of the beginning start of that. I found, the government here was very, very supportive, and it helped with people not working in silos. But there's always going to be silos. Like, we all have things to do and we all have different agendas. I think it's just undergone. Elaine Fisher is now part of it. She seems to be doing great things. My goal for Silicon Cape is that there is no need for a Silicon Cape in the future. Like, that would be you know, that would be the win, where people can just automatically, organically connect at the right time, at the right place, you know, when they need to. But, you know, how do you create that? You know, I think we're not there yet, but it's good to have people having the conversations, but more than having the conversations is actually doing stuff about it. Mm. And yeah, for me, if I think the one of the female problems is that it's the confidence thing. It's like this imposter syndrome that you keep going through of like, oh, do I actually know what I'm talking about? And most people are still just trying to figure it out. It's like when you look at your parents and you're like, oh, like you really didn't know what you were doing when you were kind of raising us, you know, yeah. Like we're all just trying to figure it out. And I think, you know, you want to try and find a leader that you can just kind of either emulate or, you know, get the best advice from.
Excellent. Thanks, Leanne. If you've just joined us on the show, you listen to the Futurology Show right here on Cliff Central. We are celebrating Women's Day today, and we have Miss Leanne de Toy talking to us, and we're talking the future of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship. Is it a ship or is it just entrepreneurial spirit? Because I have a problem with that as well.
Yeah, I like that entrepreneurial spirit. And I think, like, I wonder, like, can you grow it or do you have it? I never, like, is it nature versus nurture?
That's exactly it. And I think in the next, we've come to the sort of midpoint of the episode. And generally at this point, we start to throw forward to the future. And, like, how much do you think is happening now that is actually going to change and shape the future? And is it that nature versus nurture? Is it something that we can learn? Is it just a new style of business that everybody's going to adopt and say, well, it doesn't matter whether I'm a startup or a fresh out of university or high school or even somebody with decades of career behind me. Anybody can start this entrepreneurial journey. And yeah. It really does take the level of spirit within you is the thing that actually helps determine where you're going to go with it.
Don't look at me, Mike, like that. He's looking at me going, you mean Jamison's spirit.
There we go.
There we go. That does help, though. Along the entrepreneurial journey, a little bit of that kind of spirit does help.
But you've been in Ireland for too long this weekend.
Oh, sorry, that's more like Guinness spirit.
No, yes. Jameson whiskey.
Yeah, I know. I did finish a lot of Jameson, but the Guinness outshone. It outshone.
Did it? So, yeah. Leanne, where do you think it's going in the future?
not down to the Guinness pub.
So female-led companies delivered 63% better returns than male-led. I mean, that's just a stat. It's just, you know, from the GEM South Africa report. And I think, I think it's going to come down to collaboration. And I think it's going to be around building trust networks. And I think the people of the leaders of the future are the ones that, you know, stay curious and keep learning. And, you know, it's like getting rid of that ego. And I think, planting the seeds of the future, of our future selves today, but it's going to be around better content, building others up and finding ways to work better with each other, because I think most things don't work is because it always comes down to the people or the ego or wrong timing. And I think that's not necessarily a female or a male thing. So for me, it would be, how do we create better role models? How do we integrate things better with each other?
Leanne, just to come back to this point and the previous point about nurture, you know, the principle of elasticity of the brain and the ability to develop new capacities. A lot of this comes back down to the environment that we operate in. And, you know, when we talk about the confidence of stepping forward, it doesn't sound like we've got enough of the right environment that actually trains people. Because this, I think entrepreneurship, you know, you certainly get, I think there are very few true entrepreneurs like your Richard Branson, your Elon Musk's. You know, they truly are out of the world.
One in a million, I suppose. Yeah.
They are, but when we look at, not everyone is an entrepreneur, but I think everyone's got the capability of building a business that isn't the next billion-dollar business. And you can build a business that provides a very good lifestyle for yourself, but you're also solving real fundamental needs for your customers.
Well, that's your average entrepreneur, right?
Yeah, but there's two sides. I mean, we were talking nature, nurture. We talk about risk and opportunity.
But include the environment into that.
No, exactly. So you'll probably find that there are way more Elon Musk and Richard Branson's out there. They just the one difference that sets them apart is that they have the ability. Did they ever have the opportunity? And if they had the opportunity, did they have the balls or the attitude to actually go and take that opportunity and own it?
For sure.
I think there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes together that actually starts this perfect storm of success.
For sure, absolutely.
But it's got to start with someone. That's why I like the idea of this. Entrepreneurship sounds like it's this bigger thing. It's always going to be bigger. It starts with someone.
It does.
To do something.
Agree. Yes.
And by doing that, something happens.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, my opinion on that is that if you start chasing the money, then usually you're going down the wrong road. When you're trying to solve a problem, then, you know, work and solve the problem. And usually that's where, you know, that's like a true entrepreneur, right? So when they're
money's
trying to,
the byproduct.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and then the other thing I think is network, and by growing your network is by giving. And I mean, it sounds so cliched, but it's like the more you give, the more you get. Like every time I've given something or given my time or, you know, something comes from that, and without trying to get something back in return. And I've like see good, like lots. Yeah. That would be the mindset for me. And also like life is not fair. So, you know, thinking
that
to
my children.
Yeah, like
life
thinking that it is. Yeah, I think that's where we go wrong, is that we think that the world owes us something, and it doesn't. You owe yourself to be the best version of yourself. And if
quite
you
agreed.
Can continue doing that, whether whoever you are, just treat yourself the way, you know, treat other people the way you'd want to be treated. And I think a lot less damage would be done. We get caught up in stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I mean, like, life isn't fair. And I think the perfect, when you try to create... When you try to create this business world.
I just want to clap Mike quickly.
What's Mike?
Life
doing?
Is fair.
He keeps going on.
Life is not fair, Mike.
Life is fair.
Maybe for you,
life.
Panda Pup.
Life is quite fair. I mean, Leanne, you've just said you need to take responsibility for your own life.
No, but wait.
We're all in a different ship, but life is fair. This misconception that life is unfair is an excuse not to be responsible
life
for
Life can
it.
Become unfair to the individual when they think that they didn't get an opportunity that they missed. And this is the thing. Life is unfair to different people.
Fundamentally disagree.
Well,
life
fine.
Is fair.
Go ahead. Disagree. I accept your disagreement. So I'm going to just ignore it for now.
So you think life is fair. Life is fair.
Mike 100%. Thinks that life is fair. He thinks that the yin and the yang and the up and the down are all in perfect alignment. But so coming from an entrepreneur who has failed myself a lot.
Yeah.
I think we all
and
have
learned a ton. One big part of entrepreneurial spirit and the journey to success, or whatever you deem success to be, is grit and resilience.
Quite right.
And only reason why you'd need to grit or bear anything is because life is not
life
fair.
Was fair.
No. You're misunderstanding.
If life was fair, we'd have a capitalist society where everybody was equal and we'd all be some version of a Richard Branson.
We would have UBI.
We'd have UBI.
Would.
Well, that's
that
exactly why you're
fantastic. No, we would. Okay. I
wanted to bring up the grit thing. Yeah. And I think that's the important bit.
And I quite agree with you on the grit thing here, because if we accept the principle that life is fair and we say, what is the point of life? It is not to stay stationary. It is to evolve. It is to grow. And you grow through grit.
We all have the same opportunity. It's who takes it that makes it.
We all have different opportunities. We all have opportunities that are relevant to ourselves. And really the point is we've got to turn ourselves from a lump of coal into a diamond. That's the point of life. And that's why life is fair. We've got to be responsible for our life. And the only way we evolve is through grit. You're quite right. I agree.
I get where you're coming from.
I think we're saying the same thing in a different way, because that's exactly what I'm saying, is that like – first of all, you've got to go through it. So it's also that like gold principle, like, you know, you've got to go through the fire to get to the other side, right?
For sure.
You can't try and bypass it. And that's what I'm saying when I say like life is unfair, is that it's not about, it's like you have to take responsibility for it.
100%.
You know?
I want to change the life isn't fair statement and say life maybe is fair, but life is tough.
Of course it's tough.
Tough is the thing. The only reason why you need to grin and bear something is because it's tough. But sometimes new startups or new entrepreneurs, they don't realize that it's tough because it's tough.
Yeah, and they don't realize how tough it is.
And I think, thank goodness, like if you did know how tough it is, you probably wouldn't do it. So, you know, that part naivety and part like continuously forgiving yourself and forgiving those around you can also just kind of get you through it. And I think sometimes we also just expect so much more of, you know, what we want. And I think we also think it happens quicker than it does. Like it doesn't. It takes time.
It takes time, right?
Even people that have succeeded, and when they start something different, you know, it doesn't always work out, but it's like they just don't beat themselves up about it. You just keep moving forward. And I think that's also that entrepreneurial spirit, is just to be, is to reframe it in a way that goes, oh, okay, well, yeah, that's a lesson, not so much more of a failure.
So I have to watch myself a bit here, because I'm kind of throwing this forward a little bit. Because so if we throw this forward a little bit, surely the millennial is the future entrepreneur. Now, this is a mommy coddled generation, right? How are they going to be any good at being entrepreneurs? Or well, am I speaking to a cliche?
No, I don't think you're speaking to a cliche. But I do think the world that they're going to be.
I think Leanne's laughing at you at the moment.
No, she is. She is. So that's why I'm just jumping in. But
I'm on the cusp of being a millennial. So I'm like,
oh, you're on the cusp.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
Yeah. I don't know.
Jeez. But Brett, I think the world that they're going to be growing up or entrepreneurs in is changing so fast. I mean, if we just, and I hate to bring up the subject of blockchain and AI and what have you, but the economy that they're going to be operating in is going to be a very, very different world. So it's going to be a very interesting watch the space.
So, I mean, if I had to credit to this, like the jobs of the future probably haven't been created. So there's that one aspect. And then there's the other aspect of...
So like, the expectations are dashed because they don't know. They'll just be happily surprised when they arrive.
That's a good point, right?
So we'll just have a very happy millennial bunch when they finally get to the workforce.
So one of the things that in that speech that Mark Zuckerberg had said, he was like, when he started Facebook... He was like, I wanted to connect just some people, you know? And I think like if there was a legacy of what I would wish for the millennials is just to have the confidence to stand up and speak. And I think they do have that, but there's also the misconception of how hard you actually have to work to get stuff done.
It's the grit issue.
And I think
instant gratification is breaking that.
Instead of like giving up, where I'm not saying all millennials give up, but it's like, there's definitely that aspect. But then I have met a lot of millennials who just keep going forward. And when they find their niche, so it's actually like, how do you get someone to find out what they're really good at really quickly? So, you know, if you're not good at maths, then stay away from maths. If you're good at maths, then go there. Yeah. So maybe that's the trick is to hone in on what you're actually really good at and then like build on that. Rather than trying to be good at everything.
Yeah. There's a great TED talk that Carol Dweck, the education guru, does. Yeah. And it's called The Power of Yet. And it's all about how the educating this new generation is about not highlighting failure and not saying you failed, but saying you haven't got it right yet.
Yes.
And when you look at gaming, you can play the same level over and over and over and over again.
You don't get one hit
until you get it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we might be saying this instant gratification is creating this, you know, this mollycoddled generation where they expect things now and they're going to be not ready for the future, but they might not have grit, but persistence in the face of trial is good. So I don't know whether it's grit, because grit is about accepting the storm and going through it, knowing that at the end of it, you're actually going to get somewhere. Persistence is about knowing that you will get through it before you've even gotten to it.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a different mindset as well. So it might not be a critical thinking thing, but it's this idea that failure isn't actually an option because it's just not yet.
Yeah.
I actually want to pick up, Leanne, you spoke about helping people get there quicker.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting point as we throw it forward 3-4 years and we look at all these laws that are chasing exponentialism. My favorite word. Right? So you think about being a startup these days, you put everything on the cloud. You don't have to raise CapEx to do all that kind of stuff.
You don't need to build a building.
You don't need to build a building. Yeah. You don't need a bunch of people to install a whole lot of technology to, say, run your sales pipelines. Yeah. Access to markets are far easier to access through LinkedIn and all that kind of stuff. So I do agree with you. I think we've got the tool sets, the minds, the mind sets, as well as the platforms are really becoming quite mature to accelerate it where we should be able to get startups to a viable kind of product stage within 3 months, right?
Yeah.
Is it just a pipe dream?
No. I think, I mean, if I look at with the school, we definitely got so the criteria was you had an idea. You didn't have to have something physical. You could have it between naught and 6 months. And a lot of them, and obviously we track them. So we don't just go and say, well, you've left here for 3 months. Thanks very much. And off you go. We actually track them and try and make sure that they get all the stuff that they need. So it's not necessarily funding, but it can be, you know, would you rather have 1 million rand or would you rather have 1 million clients? So you know, just to try and get that mindset. But the other thing that is also going to come in is regulations. So, you know, what's going to happen with AI regulations, or, you know, freedom of speech and all that. So even though that they are all these access to market, it's like, well, you've still got to learn how to use them. You know, how do you do it in a proper way? So you still do need some of that strategy behind it. Yeah. And it's almost like we have this this leaderless generation, which is a good and a bad thing, because we're all pushing each other. But there's no front runner where we go and say, wow, this is the person that we need to, you know, follow or emulate, or, you know, things like that.
Throwing it forward as well, just from my side, startups, entrepreneurial spirits, it's not new people to business. It's not new people to new business. Sometimes we can take career people, and they've been in the business, they've been in enterprises, they've been in institutional business for decades. And they can start to come up, chase their ideas, chase their dreams, take the spirit and jump into the journey. So it doesn't need to be a startup-minded person that needs VC. It might be an established person that can take a new idea from a place of experience and a wealth of knowledge, and say
they're well familiar with, right?
Maybe they do fix strategies for big corporates, multinationals even, and they come in today, well, I'm actually going to bring this back to me, see where I'm going to start and take it forward from there.
Yeah.
But the question I'm trying to get to, I'm trying to get better at making my philosophies become a question.
I'm really impressed.
I'm getting better.
I thought you were about to stop.
Yeah, but you guys, your impression stops me from asking the question.
Ask a question? Why? Because we put our tongues.
Yeah. Looking at you weirdly. It's awful, yeah.
Trying to make you giggle.
The question is, does the entrepreneurial spirit become business spirit in the next 5 to 10? Is everybody, big enterprise, small enterprise, multinational, global, village, craft market, everybody needs to have this type of spirit? Because the law of innovation and the speed of innovation, the rate of change we're going through, if you're not willing to have that spirit, that gung-ho attitude to get something done, are you going to be left behind? Are you going to be disrupted?
Yeah.
Are you even going to be relevant?
Brett.
Ta-da.
Boom.
Hey. Wow.
So what's that question?
Landed.
No, but that's – I answered my question.
Did you answer your question?
High five me. No, show of one. Show of one. What do you think, Leanne?
All you.
Actually, so next week it's just Brett by himself.
Yeah.
I might not be here.
Leanne?
The awesome things that came out of the school, which I didn't think, which was a byproduct, was the mentorship. So the program is mentor-led. And what we landed up doing is having like these people that have done awesome stuff, sold multi-million, you know, dollar businesses, gone national. Yeah. And it's amazing how much they put into the actual startups. And it was quite overwhelming to think you've got someone, you know, who's a chairman of X amount of places, and he comes once a week to meet his little startup, and their payoff is that they see it succeed. And I often sometimes negate, I mean, and the stipend that they get was, I mean, it was, you know, most of them said, don't worry, it's fine. It's the paperwork is just too much. We'll come and do it, you know, because we want to. And that testament of giving back. And I think what we often forget is that people actually do want to give back, and people do want to do that mentorship and pay it forward. And I think that culture is starting to grow, and that rate of change. And then there's the flip side of that. And I think the reason why a lot of them want to do it is because they want to see what these younger guys are doing or these other startups are doing so that they can stay ahead of it. So the payoff for them is not necessarily, you know, it's obviously seeing someone succeed, but it's also seeing what are other people doing that they can dovetail off, and how many of those people then invested into those businesses.
Absolutely.
So I think there's the flip side of it. So there's the mentorship, but then also you as a mentee are going, oh my goodness, I've got this amazing mentor. But I think you forget that the student becomes the teacher, and the teacher becomes a student often as well.
So sorry, just on that mentorship, of all the experience that you've gone through, Leanne, you know, you've got a great CV, and you've certainly walked around the block here. And just ready to throw the idea forward, what are you most excited about looking forward to the future here? What really, you know, beyond right now and the new job that you've got, what excites you about the work that you do going forward into the future?
So personally, and okay, so for me, it would be just the minds that I get to meet are all the people that I get to interact with are at the top of their game, at the top of their industry. They expect nothing less than perfection, and they expect it from you and everyone around them. And I really like that. Like, to be the stupidest person in the room for me is quite important. I think that's like, I want to be always that person. Yeah, all the time. And, but then the other side of it is being able to find the connections and opportunities of connecting people at that, just being able to be at the right time at the right place, like bringing an investment into South Africa when it was just a phone call away. Like, that's really satisfying. Or, you know, one of the things, one of my favorite stories is one of a gentleman mailed me while I was still at Silicon Cape, and he said, I need a ticket to get to the States. I've got this new technology. I just need to get there. And one of our donors like put up their hand and said, okay, fine, I'll sponsor it. And from that, he's now doing amazing stuff. Like those kind of stories, no one really talks about, but that for me, those are the little ones, or, you know, the big ones when you're seeing, you changing and someone's
to start,
life.
To start seeing more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's more, there is more of that, and we don't talk about it enough. And yeah. And also I'd love for South Africans just as a culture, you know, we always, whenever you bring someone in, you know, you talk them up, but actually we don't talk ourselves up enough. You know, so the people that do end up standing up, you kind of think, wow, that's so abrasive. But actually, why don't you do that? Why don't you say, like, you are amazing? Because what's wrong with saying something like that? Yeah, and I think more people just need to believe in their own confidence in themselves. Moment, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, I'm about the soft stuff, but I think it's important.
I totally agree with you.
I agree too.
I think most of it sits in the heart and passion, right? So, guys, we're literally at the end of the show. And
for
anyone who's joining us, please follow us on at Futurology Show. And if you
go on Twitter,
on Twitter, where else would you follow an at, Brett?
I don't think we've got that handle anywhere else. So it's only Twitter, at Futurology Show. You can try Instagram, but you won't find us there. You won't try Facebook, you'll probably fail as well. But if you go to Twitter, at Futurology Show, we're probably there.
Because you're fuck off lazy at this.
It's too much to deal with, bro. Seriously. And then also, if you missed the podcast, this has been a live thing today on Women's Day. So to all the women's listening. Yep. Women's? All the women's.
Happy Women's Day.
All the women's listening. Yes. Happy Women's Day.
Happy Women's Day.
And if you've just tuned in now, you can catch the podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe to the Futurology
and
Show.
And please give us five stars.
Five shows.
Give us five shows.
Five shows for four
stars. To win your heart over. And then you can give us five stars. But yes, thank you guys. It's been fun being in studio with you guys today.
Yeah,
it's been great. And Leanne, thanks for joining us on Skype. Excellent. We look forward to seeing and chatting to you again.
Yeah, definitely.
Superb, guys. Thanks very much. And over and out.
This is CliffCentral.com.